Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
How are we doing this afternoon? I almost feel like I have to play this here, unfortunately, because what happened to this whole cooling off trend that we were supposed to have, right? I don't know about that.
It's so damn hot. Milk was a bad choice.
Did I just misread the forecast last week where it looked like we're going to have comfortable temperatures, and now it looks like it's going to be like 90 every day this week?
It
Sue, do you have
hotter.
Any idea? What did I do wrong there? Didn't we misinterpret that? And I don't even know if I have Sue this afternoon. Testing? No, I do not have Sue. Oh, wait. Here she is. Let's try this. Sue, are you there?
I'm right here.
Yeah. I know what happened. The host didn't pay attention to the right button. No, Ethan kind of told me that it was...
Wait a second. You feeling all right? You're not putting this on me? You feeling okay today?
That's actually a valid question. In fairness, I'm looking at my board. Sue does, you know, we might as well just be honest here. Sometimes Sue does the show from a remote location. Like every morning, you're not here in the building, right?
Right.
But for the afternoon show, which is far more important, she usually is 98% of the time, which is why that's prioritized over Cox. So every once in a while, and this is a good example, you'll still do it from home, and then I pull you up on the board. Most people would never know, except that I'm highlighting you here this afternoon to start
That's
the show.
Great.
But we have something called Access 4, and then we have an Opal 4. I don't know what either of those things mean. I just know that you're coming up on Access 4, and Josh Hammer, who's busy getting the new iPhone at the Apple store in Florida, is going to come up on Opal 4. So that was... Damn it, Ethan, it was my fault.
Okay.
It was my fault, unfortunately.
Well, you know, it happens to the best of us. I do have to share real quick. I got a real good laugh out of Sue just a second ago when I was pulling her up on the board, getting everything set up. I was like, all right, we're all set. Voila. And then I said, well, as Mark would say, viola.
That made me laugh out loud.
But you have to explain that story, because otherwise there's no context for us. Because I was anchoring the news. This is 25 years ago. I'm anchoring the news in Milwaukee. And I have a co-anchor. Sherry Preston is a great anchor. She's still on ABC Radio Network. And I'm reading the copy. And it was a kicker story, which is like the last one in the segment. It's like a lighter story.
Yeah,
and I read the copy and I say, and viola. And they both, my co-host and my news anchor, looked at me like I was an idiot, because I was. I had never seen the word, apparently I'd never seen the word voila in print. And I'm like, you know, Will Ferrell and Anchorman. I'm just reading what's on the page there. And it didn't, and they just laughed
well,
at me. So
I just, you know, I'm the pot calling the kettle black, because I just did this literally 2 hours ago on air with a word that I had never heard before, or I guess seen on paper.
Oh.
And, you know, Annie.
Well, what was it?
Annie Fried does the YouTube live chat poll every day, where she gauges her audience's thoughts on whatever the poll is that day. And I was reading it, and the word impasse was written. And I had never seen that typed up. And I said, impasse.
I'm passe.
Well, you're very French.
I'm passe. Yeah, exactly. Voila. Yeah. Voila, impasse. Well, that happens. See, every once in a while, your eyes will tell you one thing, and then your brain, you know, doesn't translate it right.
I've done it, too. I just can't remember the word, but I know I've done it.
Fred's never done it. He's a Hall of Famer. He doesn't do that kind of stuff.
You know what? In college, I made a horrible mistake, and I was supposed to say the word horror, but I had it as one syllable. and it just did not sound good.
What did it say there, Fred?
Fred?
Yeah.
Naughty I think we Fred. Can all connect the dots on that one.
Okay, can somebody help me with something here? And I'm gonna depend on Ethan. We got a lot of stuff to talk about here this afternoon. There's a new. It's funny because when I first heard about the peace plan to end the war in Gaza, it was 11 points, and then it was like 14 points, and now it's 20 points. So that number could change. But Josh Hammer is going to join us here, I think, in a few minutes, and he's perfectly timed to explain that Netanyahu apparently is on board. This is just being rolled out right now. All the particulars of the plan. So Josh is going to show us or kind of explain some of that to us here in just a few minutes. Jen Say from XXXY Athletics will be on at 4:33 this afternoon. But let me play this just because it's caught a lot of people's attention. It's really caught mine. We now have a Super Bowl halftime show that's going to be from someone who's not going to do any of the songs in English. So we've totally come full circle here. Maybe Kamala should be president because Bad Bunny has been selected as the Super Bowl halftime entertainment. This was rolled out yesterday. I couldn't, like, if you put a gun to my head, I think if you put a gun to most people in the country's head and said, give me one Bad Bunny song, or who is Bad Bunny, they'd say, oh, that's that bunny that Marquez that chews on the
Oreo.
On the carpeting all the
Oreo
time.
Oreo Smorio.
Yeah. His
on
name
Instagram.
Is Oreo. Oreo Smorio the bunny on Instagram, of course. But, you know, I've heard of Bad Bunny, and in fairness to Bad Bunny, he does have a big audience. Had
huge.
One of them, yeah, and had one of the more, because I did a little, you know, I like to just say things that are inaccurate all the time. I'm a talk show host, so that comes with the qualifications. But I did look into this just a little bit, and he had one of the bigger tours, like amongst the top 20 tours in the country. But
it's all in Spanish?
Well, I don't know. Ethan, is it all in Spanish?
I mean, 99% okay. at least.
Well, I wonder how they do the censorship.
I don't know any of his music. I didn't know this, but it had like 900 million views on YouTube. He's huge internationally.
Right, right.
Well, I mean, he gets
maybe
like
that's part of it
on
the
Spotify.
NFL,
he gets, I think I saw last night, 77 million monthly listeners. So like he gets a lot of listens, but it's all in Spanish. I'm like,
okay.
Yes, I get the whole globalizing the NFL, but this is the biggest American event, not the biggest worldly sporting event.
Not only that, but during the 250th birthday of our country. Okay, let's look at that just for a moment as well.
But apparently they offered it to Taylor Swift first, who wanted to be paid, so she said no. And then they offered there was a rumor that said that...
I know, that's a rumor. That seems weird to me, but...
Maybe. But she also knows her own value, right? Why is she people pay all that money to go to her stuff and then I don't know.
In other words, because
she doesn't need the promotion.
No, she doesn't. But I mean, it's one of those things that a lot of legendary bands have done because it's an honor. But in other words, she's not being. That seems like a weird thing for Taylor to say. No, I'm worth $150 billion, but I'm not going to do the Super Bowl halftime show. Maybe there was some things just with I don't know, just because of everything with her hubby, right?
Well,
her soon-to-be hubby.
That
because
could be.
There could be politics there involved that she'd want to stay away from. But do you know Bad Bunny? Are you a Bad Bunny fan, Sue?
No, I don't know anything about it. And then they said there was another person they offered it to. So Bad Bunny was the third choice. And I guess they were at that point looking for someone to say yes.
Well, okay, and those are reports. We'll see if anything comes of that. What I would say is, just because I'm always looking at these things and trying to figure out what the hell the NFL is thinking. The international appeal does make sense to a certain... Look, they were just in Dublin. They're going to be in Madrid next week.
London
they were just in Brazil.
Or London for a game.
London.
But then Madrid is coming up too,
yeah,
I think,
there's,
right?
There's a bunch of them this
so,
year.
But listen to the Super Bowl halftime shows. Let's see if there's a pattern that exists here from the last 6-7 years, okay? In 2019, Maroon 5 was the Super Bowl halftime show. I'd even put that one in the questionable category because I don't know. I look at
as
bands
far as
that
what
I guess I see the Super Bowl halftime show as bands that are on a little bit of a higher plane than Maroon 5. I like Maroon 5. I saw them in Vegas a few years ago. I like Adam, but that anyway. 2020, Shakira and J-Lo. Okay, 2021, The Weeknd. 2022 was when we had Dre, Snoop, Mary J. Blige, Eminem. He's white, but not really. And then Kendrick. And Anderson .Paak was in that group as well. I like Anderson .Paak quite a bit. 23 was Rihanna. Okay. 24 was Usher. 25 was Kendrick. And now you have Bad Bunny. So first of all, if you are white and you play a guitar, you are off the list. There's no such thing as a white artist who plays guitar, something silly like that. Like, you couldn't even play other musical instruments too, right? You have little buttons that you can press, so you're like the DJ when you're up there and people can dance. But if you're actually playing real music, we do not have any interest in you performing at the Super Bowl halftime show. Which, you know, let's take a look at that for a second, because maybe there's something to that, Sue, because they don't just do, you know, a band on a stage anymore. We saw what happened with Kendrick. It's like this whole performance on stage. The music doesn't even matter. It's really the, you know, the spectacle, if you will. So maybe there are bands that, you know, the Who's been there before, they're too old now. Springsteen's been up there. We've had Coldplay, bands like that. They don't maybe have the artistic appeal. And then the other thing that, Ethan, you mentioned, it's Jay-Z that's kind of making the call on some of this stuff, right?
Rock Nation is his label, and I guess they have a huge say. They might be the decision makers. I'm sure they're partnered with the NFL. It's not just them, but they have a huge say in the direction they want this to go, and who is making this final call. Yeah. Jay-Z is a huge part of it.
I don't like it, but I don't, you know, what do I don't care. I'm still going to watch the game. Maybe that's what they figure. The people who don't care are still going to watch the game, and then maybe it'll be a good halftime show.
Well, I saw Phil Collins, so there you go.
Is that the one you were there?
In 1999.
Yeah. That seems so outdated.
Yeah.
Doesn't that seem so outdated now, Phil Collins?
It does.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so the other, you know, the couple stories of the weekend. First of all, we're going to talk a little bit here this afternoon with Dan Reardon and Frank Cusimano. The Ryder Cup became very uninteresting.
I couldn't watch it.
Well, okay, it became very uninteresting Saturday because we were getting smoked, all right? So at one point yesterday, I'm on my couch watching football, and Steve Butts, state rep, very good friend of the show, personal friend, he's on the round table, says, "Are you watching the Ryder Cup?" I'm like, "Ah, I gave up on that. We were getting our asses kicked." So I tuned back in, and sure enough, the Americans are making a bit of a run. But unfortunately, the story...
Horrible.
What's that?
They were behaving horribly.
You mean the galleries?
There was so much... Yes, everybody was so awful. I can't watch this.
Awful. And see, now, I don't know how you fix this. It's embarrassing. It really is what happened. And the things that were hurled at Rory and beer splashed on his wife. It's just... Now, I know that these could be a few bad apples, but there's a lot of stuff that's been happening in the crowd. I don't know what the balance is, because you want to have the Ryder Cup with energy, cheering on your country, but this stuff got way out of hand. Here's Rory yesterday.
With all that in mind, everything you go through, how satisfying is it to turn around to someone and say, quote, "Shut the F up," and then stiff it to 2 feet?
Very f-ing satisfying.
Congratulations.
It wasn't stiff. It wasn't stiff. I had to put it.
I don't even know if that was Rory, actually. But
that was the first... a reporter asking a question, and then Rory's the one that said it was effing satisfying.
Right.
And then that was Tommy Fleetwood that made the
Tommy Fleetwood
after.
Was his playing partner over the weekend, who got very emotional on Saturday after the morning rounds because they were so happy that they had won. But here's what Rory was saying about just the fans overall.
I don't think we should ever accept that in golf. I think golf should be held to a higher standard. But, you know, we will be making sure to say to our fans in Ireland in 2027 that what happened here this week is not acceptable. And it's, you know, for me, come and support your home team. You know, come and support your team. You know, I think if I was an American, I would be annoyed that people... I didn't hear a lot of shouts for Scotty today, but I heard a lot of shouts against me. And it's like, support your players. You know, that's the thing. So we shut them up by our performance and how we played, and we tried to... You know, I chirped back a few times because it got to me a few times, but we tried to handle everything that came our way with class and poise, and for the most part, I felt like we did that.
That was an exceptionally good answer from Rory McIlroy.
Yes.
Extremely good, because, look, you could have said something with more emotion and anger. He's very good in moments like this, and it's disgusting what happened. So I hope, you know, and his point is extremely well taken. Yeah, cheer for the Americans. Don't be cussing and dropping. I mean, they're dropping the C word and stuff like that on references to girlfriends and wives. It's just ridiculous.
I mean, this is one of the most beloved golfers in the game over the last 15 years. It's not like this is some guy that's made himself out to be an enemy of the golf world.
Well, I don't
care
about
Rory McIlroy is beloved. So for all of a sudden to be at that extreme is ridiculous.
For any of them on the European team.
Exactly.
And by the way, he says golf on a higher plate because of the silence around the greens and the tee. But any sport, that is unacceptable, some of that behavior. And hopefully they booted a bunch of people out. But Dan Reardon will have a lot to say on that here in a couple hours. We'll also wrap up the Cardinals season a little bit with Scotty Warman this afternoon. Josh Hammer's
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland. You know the Browns outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Up. We had some news that was being made just a short time ago with President Trump and Bibi Netanyahu on a new Gaza peace plan.
If accepted by Hamas, this proposal calls for the release of all remaining hostages immediately, but in no case more than 72 hours. So the hostages are coming back.
So it is a 20-point peace plan. Benjamin Netanyahu was in the room when the announcement was made.
I believe that today we're taking a critical step towards both ending the war in Gaza and setting the stage for dramatically advancing peace in the Middle East, and I think beyond the Middle East.
Josh Hammer is with us this afternoon. Could not be better time considering that everything is going on with this afternoon. He's the senior Newsweek editor-at-large. You hear his show every Saturdays at 1 p.m. on 97.1 FM Talk. And I'm told he's making his first call ever on his brand-new iPhone 17. So congratulations. Testing. Are you there? It better sound good for the amount of money that we have to pay for these things, Josh.
Mark, I hope I'm coming through loud and clear, but you are literally the first caller on the brand new phone, so you go.
Sounds fantastic. How are you overall? Doing well?
I'm hanging in there, my friend.
Well, let's talk about this plan. I mean, I don't know. I know you were busy at the Apple store, which can be a pretty involved process, but there's been build up to this and the announcement of this. It seems like you don't make an announcement if Netanyahu and the Israelis aren't on board. They seem to be on board with this. Have you looked at this plan in particular, and do you think it's workable? Look, we've both been around a lot of these situations with the Middle East where plans come out, they get blown up, ceasefires don't last very long. Is this something that could actually work, in your opinion?
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I think the answer is no.
I think it is, too. I think it is, too. But I want to hear your explanation.
Yeah, I think this is wholly unworkable. Bibi Netanyahu is not a dumb person. He has been around the block a very long time, and I think he knows this. I think he knows that this is actually unworkable. I think that he feels like he's somewhat boxed in here. You have the Trump administration that, not erroneously, is very eager for a deal. This is a deal-making administration. They've been making peace deals all throughout the world. Armenia, Azerbaijan, India, Pakistan, Cambodia, Thailand, and on and on and on it goes. And I think they understand that that is what is really happening here. And I think that Netanyahu is probably also calculating, and I think correctly here, that Hamas is probably going to say no. Hamas is probably not going to actually accept this deal for the very simple reason that they are a bunch of fanatical maximalist jihadists who genuinely do not agree with anything remotely resembling a permanent Israeli or Jewish presence there in the Eastern Mediterranean. And they're going to reject this, I believe. I could be wrong, but that's my prediction here. In that case, Netanyahu will have made a very shrewd calculation, because then he will indeed get a fulsome two thumbs up from President Trump, go ahead to go and finish the job in Gaza, at least insofar as the IDF and the Israelis define finishing the job there. But look, I mean, you're talking here about a bunch of like deeply fanciful notions. The notion that Hamas will simply agree to stop fighting, the notion that Hamas will voluntarily disarm and demilitarize, the notion that various other Arab stakeholders in the region will come in and oversee this de-radicalization, disarming process. I fail to see, frankly, how one of these things will come to fruition, let alone all of them. So I just don't think it's going to happen. I give the administration credit for clearly putting a lot of thought into this. I mean, 21 points, a lot of points. But frankly, Mark, that's kind of part of the problem in the first place. I think we tend to kind of over-intellectualize a lot of this. Sometimes war is really not so complicated. Sometimes it's actually very simple. There's a good guy and there's a bad guy, and the good guy should just defeat the bad guy. That's what happened in World War II. That's what should happen in Gaza as well.
So what would happen? I mean, here again, I don't think this is going to happen, and I think that your breakdown there and the calculations are right. But if, let's say, Hamas, I looked at the 20 points here. You know, some of this is not completely unreasonable, and there seems to be a path here that Israel is interested in. What if they do say, okay, we got to do this. We got to move forward.
Well, then Israel's not going to back out at that point, I don't think. I mean, if Hamas actually agrees, then I don't think Israel wants to be seen in the eyes of the Trump administration as a party that is going to blow up the administration's new peace plan. So I presume that they'll kind of just go ahead with it full throttle at that particular point, and they'll basically just hope for the best. I mean, even if Hamas accepts it, right, Mark? I mean, query what accept even means. I mean, they could verbally say they accept it, and then they'll probably find some way to kind of blow it up any number of times in the ensuing days, weeks, and months ahead. So Netanyahu, at that point, would probably just calculate that, okay, we'll wait until Hamas has clearly and irrevocably blown this deal up, and then I will have full permission, he will think, to kind of go in and finish the job according to our terms. That's what I'm thinking, at least. Again, I could be off on all of this, but I think that's what he's thinking. Netanyahu, recall, is also facing a lot of domestic pressure.
Right.
Okay.
That's
so
true.
A lot. There is a large, large, large block of Israelis who, like Americans, like Europeans, like most of the world, are war weary and they're tired of this conflict. I mean, Israel's a small country. It's a conscription military. You're talking here close to 1,000 young Israeli soldiers who have paid the ultimate price since October 7th. That's making this already Israel's longest war in its history, one of its bloodiest wars in its history. And a lot of people just want this thing to be over. And you have a very large hostage family lobby back there in Israel as well that wants to get the hostage back at essentially any cost whatsoever at this point there. So he's facing a ton of pressure, and that's probably factoring into this as well. But I can't think that Netanyahu, in his heart, thinks that this is a good deal, because, frankly, I'm not sure that it is either.
So here's what he says on that specifically.
All our hostages, both those who are alive and those who died, all of them will return home immediately. Hamas will be disarmed. Gaza will be demilitarized. Israel will retain security responsibility, including a security perimeter for the foreseeable future. And lastly, Gaza will have a peaceful civilian administration that is run neither by Hamas nor by the Palestinian Authority.
Obviously very hopeful there. The president says, what if they don't agree? What if Hamas does not agree?
If they're unable to do so, then Israel would have the absolute right, and actually our full backing, the U.S. full backing, Marco's here, and would have my full backing to finish the job of destroying the threat of Hamas. But I hope that we're going to have a deal for peace.
So, Josh, going back to what you said earlier, sounds like either, you know, you kind of go for this deal here, or this thing's going to get a lot more bloody.
Yeah, I think it's basically exactly correct. Now, look, Netanyahu is partially to blame here, Mark. I definitely don't hold Netanyahu, you know, fully blame free. Trump has basically been yelling from the rafters to Netanyahu to finish this job since he took office back in January. He came up with this kind of wild notion of the U.S. redeveloping Gaza, the U.S. kind of coming in, making it into a Riviera Mediterranean. I mean, that seemingly caught Bibi off guard in the moment. And even holding that aside, I mean, Trump's various extremely harsh posts about Hamas and Truth Social, very threatening stuff. He's essentially been telling Bibi without explicitly telling him, I have your back, just do this and do this hard so I can finish this war and get a domestic victory lap at home, etc. And Netanyahu has not fully read the room on that. We're just being very candid here. I'm obviously deeply supportive of Israel, but I wish that Netanyahu himself would listen to President Trump a little bit more closely in this respect. So the fact that he is at this particular predicament is not entirely the fault, frankly, of the administration or Steve Witkoff or anyone. I think Bibi bears bears a fair amount of the responsibility. Again, I don't envy his position because he's just in a really difficult place when it comes to the domestic political pressures at home. It's a tough job. It's a tough job being the Prime Minister of Israel, especially given present realities there in the Middle East. One thing I can say for sure is that no matter the various details as to what this looks like over the next few months, regardless of how much it gets off the ground, Israel is never going to go back to an October 6, 2023 status quo ante. They're never going to go back to that mentality. They're never going to go back to that security posture when it comes to Gaza. So that is a given. And what is also a given is that people do anything it takes to get their hostages home. Beyond that, I think there are some details to be determined here.
Josh, always great to have you on. You can hear his show over the weekend on Saturday afternoons at 1 p.m. Enjoy the new iPhone. I appreciate you joining me this afternoon.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Got Sue's News on a Monday coming up in the next hour. Also, very interesting story that is taking place in Iowa with a superintendent of a school that has been revealed to be someone who's not legally in this country. And there's a little bit more to that. We're going to hook up with my friend Joel Curtinitis up in Des Moines. Joel used to be a regular contributor back like in 2012 and 2016 with things that were happening in Iowa. We have not caught up in a while. So he'll join us in the next hour. Right now, Jen Say back with us, founder and CEO of XXXY Athletics, a U.S. champion gymnast. Of course, she did the Emmy Award-winning documentary Athlete A, and the new film Generation COVID is coming out. Jen, how are you this afternoon? Welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Always happy to talk to you.
I want to talk a little bit about your reaction to Jimmy Kimmel and some of the things that happened last week, but I find it, I haven't addressed this yet because the show just started about 40 minutes ago, but the J.K. Rowling, Emma Watson dust-up is quite fascinating, isn't it? And J.K. has such a great way, I'm going to read her entire, you know, tweet that responded to all this, but she should be a writer for a living. She writes things very well, don't you think?
She's really got some talent, doesn't she?
She really does.
Undiscovered.
You want to give the background of this a little bit? I mean, this is kind of the continuing saga of some of the cast members that made gazillions of dollars because they starred in the movies that were based on the books from J.K. Rowling, but because she is a TERF and a transphobe and a bigot and all these other things, they don't want to be associated with her anymore, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the top line would be, you know, obviously she wrote these books that made her a billionaire that the entire world has read. Before she wrote them, she was a struggling single mom, I think even homeless for a time. She made these young people famous beyond their wildest dreams when they were very young. And then they came at her with pitchforks.
Yeah.
Because she said men can't be women, basically. And now Emma Watson, in a recent interview, which I'm not sure why she did this interview. I don't know if she's promoting a project or something. Is basically sort of trying to walk some of it back
right.
a little bit. It's like she sees the writing on the wall and the tides are turning. And these people who pretend that they're brave and courageous and have all this like strength and strong beliefs are just putting their finger in the wind, and they sort of see which way the tide is turning, which is towards truth. And I think she wants to sort of step away from some of the harshest criticisms, and they're not even criticisms. I mean, like character slander that she lobbed at Rowling, the woman who gave her career.
Yeah, it's interesting because JK's response was, okay, that's fine, but a little too late. And let me explain my feelings on this. You know, and she had a great post that I read from a couple of weeks ago when some of this was happening with the, and I forget the name of the comedian that was arrested upon landing in London.
Graham.
Yeah.
Yeah, Graham Linehan.
That's right, Graham Linehan. But, I mean, she had a great post where she said, hey, at what point do you take issue with any of these stances, which seem very reasonable on the issue of women's sports, which we focus on all the time? And that's what fascinates me about the people that hit her and criticize her. If you break down the issues one by one on what they might have an issue with, I don't even think they know what they're talking about. They just think that they should be against her because they've been told that she's a transphobe.
Yes, exactly. What I was going to say is none of these people have strongly held beliefs. They just like to pretend that they're stunning and brave and taking a strong stance, but they're just doing what the crowd does. And that's so obvious now. The fact it's so cruel that they would come after this woman who they know, who gave them their careers, who they know is smarter than they are, let's be honest. And you know, especially during a time, and she talks about that in the post from today or last night, when the threats were at their worst that were directed at her, and no one has dealt with more threat of violence than J.K. Rowling over this stuff, simply for saying that men are not women and women deserve their own spaces. She's gone so far as to build out a women's shelter that is for women only in Scotland, using her own money to do that. So I think the point is these people are also weak-willed, and yet they, you know, pretend at being these like activists with strong opinions that are firmly held, and they just have no morals or principles, because the minute they sense the wind blowing the other direction, they want to kind of walk away from it and pretend they never said the terrible things they said. They're pathetic. And why anyone is afraid of them when they can't defend their position anyway, because it's not a position, it's just standing with the crowd.
Do you think that, I'm curious, I brought this up a little bit last week, do you think that Charlie Kirk, the aftermath of the assassination, what we saw, for example, last week at the ceremony, more younger people maybe feeling a little bit more free on, you know, espousing conservative values. There's a part of me that thinks that that's part of to use Turning Point, ironically, in this country, because it gives people, it's not just a Trump thing. In other words, it gives people who are celebrity sports figures, whether it's Bruce Pearl or whether it's a, you know, basketball player or someone like that, a football player, gives them comfort because you can talk about Charlie Kirk and you don't have to necessarily bring Trump's name into it, if that makes sense.
Well, that's an interesting view. I hadn't really thought of it that way. I mean, I do think it's a watershed moment. Of course, time will tell, but, you know, looking at the number of new chapter people applying for new Turning Point chapters, the number of people that have shown up at the various memorial services, not just the main one, but the ones all around the country. And I will tell you, this weekend and last weekend, I was at two events that I was speaking at that were not conservative events. One was actually a radical feminist event. These women all believe that in women's sex-based rights. And the one this weekend was for GenSpect, which is a medical organization providing an alternative, which should be the real path to helping kids with this kind of distress when they're young. And all of the people there that I spoke to were very shaken by the assassination and more inspired to speak up. I think the reason is because it feels like a crisis. And it's like, well, we have to do it. We have to speak up. We can't let ourselves be silenced. We can't let the bad guys win.
Yeah. And that kind of brings us, you know, to Jimmy Kimmel, your thoughts on the aftermath of that. By the way, St. Louis connection, Molly McNeary, his wife, is from here in St. Louis. I haven't thought he was funny for a long time. I've made a very strong case on the show, Jen, that I did not like the government aspect of this, the influence from Brendan Carr. So I wish that hadn't happened, because I feel like, and you and I talk about these issues where I really feel like we're making progress on the moral high ground on so much of this, right? And I think that seeded a little bit. So that was a little disappointing. But I mean, I never care if Jimmy Kimmel comes back or not, really.
I agree. I agree with all of that. I haven't ever watched his show. I did used to watch The Man Show a million years ago, which was actually kind of funny. But I've never watched his show. I did watch the monologue, which was the supposed apology, which was not an apology. You know, I wish the show would just sink on its own for not being funny and not being relevant and being offensive to more than half the country. He was disgusting during COVID, in my opinion. You know, he's the one that said, I don't know if you remember this, rest in peace, Wheezy. So
oh, yeah.
It was basically advocating that anyone who didn't get the vaccine should not basically get medical treatment, which is insane. I did tune in the night of his monologue when he came back on the air. I mean, first of all, this sort of like crisis on the left, that this is the biggest speech catastrophe of our lifetime. I mean, the man was off the air for 4 days. Give me a break.
Oh, my God. And by the way, and see, sometimes in these moments, I can't help myself and I have to listen and watch to a lot of CNN. And it was like nonstop. You would have thought it was the biggest story. And they paid more attention to that than the actual, you know, assassination of Charlie Kirk, which is disgusting.
Well,
but they did.
Or, by the way, the same day that he came back on the air, Google announced that they had censored and kicked off a gazillion regular everyday people
story.
During COVID.
Yes.
At the behest of the Biden administration, they explicitly said they were pressured by the government to remove accounts during COVID for things like, you know, the lab leak theory, which is true, and, you know, yeah. talking about vaccine side effects. And this is thousands of everyday Americans versus one very rich comedian who had his show paused for 4 days. So to me, that's a crisis. That's a constitutional crisis. Not a comedian whose show isn't performing, who's down, it's down 72% in viewership in the last decade. He should be kicked off the air. Any normal person in a normal job who was performing that poorly would lose their job.
Yeah.
That said, briefly, his monologue was really maddening as well, because he did not apologize and he did get choked up twice. I felt like the first time he got choked up, which is when he said, you know, I didn't mean to make light of a young man's murder. It just felt to me like he was crying tears for himself. He is sad. He thinks of himself as the good guy. He's the nice guy. He's a Democrat. It's the shield from, you know, any criticism. Well, we're the nice ones. He was crying because people thought he wasn't nice. He was mean and he got caught. That's why he was crying.
And you know what?
He
is mean.
He was sorry.
Yeah, that the thing is I'd like to believe his apology, but I didn't, because I know how mean-spirited he is, and I've heard it for the past, you know, 9 years in particular. Hey, any since we last spoke a few weeks ago, you got any movement on Generation COVID being able to be streamed somewhere or seen by all of us, Jen?
We have some good movement. Do you know what Angel Studios is?
I don't. I'm not familiar with them.
Okay, they are this very cool platform. They had a big movie, now I'm going to forget the name because I'm a dum-dum, out about a year and a half ago. And basically, if you're a member of Angel Studios, Sound of Freedom.
Oh, okay,
Sound of Freedom?
Right, yes, absolutely.
Okay, that's Angel Studios. It came out in 2023, and I guess it grossed about $250 million.
Oh, yeah, it did really well.
That was released by Angel. So they have a unique process where the people who are members of Angel to their platform, they vote on films that make it through. So we've made the final phase of the vote with Angel. We've gone through the first two stage gates and we're at the final phase. So any one of your listeners that is a subscriber to Angel, very soon in the next like 2 days, we're going to have the full film uploaded and you'll be able to vote for it if you want to see it come out in the theaters and streaming.
Hey, please, in case I miss this on your social, will you please let Fred know when that's up there? I want to make sure that we spread the word here because I can't wait to see it myself.
Awesome.
All right. Hey, Jen, thank you so much. And let us know. Keep us posted, okay?
I will.
All right,
thank
take care.
You.
Yep.
Bye.
All right, coming off a great conversation with Jen Tsai, who is always awesome. You should follow her on the X formerly Twitter at Jen Tsai. You can follow me at Mark Reardon KFTK. But J.K. Rowling, really, she's one of my favorites. I've never read the Harry Potter books. I probably should have. I've seen all the movies. I like quite a few of them. But she's so impressive on this particular issue. And so she responds. And again, if you weren't listening in the previous segment, Emma Watson has come out and she's kind of shifted gears just a little bit when it comes to her stance, not even on the trans issue, but on J.K. Rowling, because she has attacked J.K. Rowling over, you know, the trans issue. So J.K. posts on the X, formerly Twitter, because this sort of starts to make some news in this interview that Emma Watson does. So she says, I'm seeing quite a bit of comment about this, so I want to make a couple of points. I'm not owed eternal agreement from any actor who once played a character I created. The idea is as ludicrous as me checking with the boss I had when I was 21 for what opinions I should hold these days. Emma Watson and her co-stars have every right to embrace gender identity ideology. Such beliefs are legally protected, and I wouldn't want to see any of them threatened with loss of work or violence or death because of them. However, Emma and Dan. I just love how she calls Daniel Radcliffe Dan. I don't know why. In particular, have both made it clear over the last few years that they think our former professional association gives them a particular right, nay, obligation, to critique me and my views in public. Years after they finished acting in Potter, they continue to assume the role of de facto spokespeople for the world I created. When you've known people since they were 10 years old, it's hard to shake a certain protectiveness. Until quite recently, she wrote, I hadn't managed to throw off the memory of children who needed to be gently coaxed through their dialogue in a big scary film studio. For the past few years, I've repeatedly declined invitations from journalists to comment on Emma specifically, most notably on the witch trials of J.K. Rowling. Ironically, I told the producers that I didn't want her to be hounded as the result of anything I said. She had said something in an award show where, you know, she referred to the witches, and then she J.K. Rowling says, the television presenter in the attached clip highlights Emma's all-witches speech, and in truth, that was a turning point for me. But it had a postscript that hurt far more than the speech itself. Emma asked someone to pass on a handwritten note from her to me, which contained the single sentence, quote, I'm so sorry for what you're going through, unquote. J.K. in parentheses says, she has my phone number. This was back when the death, rape, and torture threats against me were at their peak, at a time when my personal security measures had to be tightened considerably and I was constantly worried for my family's safety. Emma had just publicly poured more petrol on the flames, yet thought a one-line expression of concern from her would reassure me of her fundamental sympathy and kindness. Like other people who've never experienced adult life uncushioned by wealth and fame, Emma has so little experience of real life, she's ignorant of how ignorant she is. She'll never need a homeless shelter. She'll never be placed on a mixed-sex public hospital ward. I'd be astounded if she's been in a high street changing room since childhood. Her public bathroom is single occupancy and comes with security standing outside the door. Had she had to strip off in a newly mixed-sex changing room at a council-run swimming pool, that was actually posed as a question. Has she? Is she ever likely to need a state-run rape crisis center that refuses to guarantee an all-female service? To find herself sharing a prison cell with a male rapist who's identified into a women's prison? I wasn't a multimillionaire at 14. I lived in poverty while writing the book that made Emma famous. I therefore understand from my own life experience what the trashing of women's rights in which Emma has so enthusiastically participated means to women and girls without her privileges. The greatest irony here, she said, is that had Emma not decided in her most recent interview to declare that she loves and treasures me, change of tack I suspect she's adopting because she's noticed full-throated condemnation of me is no longer quite as fashionable as it was, I might have never been this honest. She says adults can't expect to cozy up to an activist movement that regularly calls for friends' assassination and then assert their right to the former friend's love as though the friend was in fact their mother. Emma is rightly free to disagree with me and indeed to discuss her feelings about me in public, but I have the same right and I've decided to exercise it.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.